faithful God and unfaithful people. Our authors have so entitled our lesson, and it's brought to you by passages from Numbers 25, verses 10 through 13, 1 Samuel chapter 2, verses 30 through 36. For those of you who've been around Family Church School, Sunday School for a long time, you know this is a familiar passage. I mean, you may have forgotten it, but it's one that from my early days, childhood days, I remember this lesson about, especially the one on 1 Samuel. But over in Numbers, chapter 25, we have three verses there that we need to examine to see exactly how the priestly covenant came about. You know, Terry, whenever we have an equation, you know, one of the familiar ones is that x plus y, x minus y equals something. And in order to solve, you need to at least know one of those, what one of them is. Depending on the spiritual equation, anytime you have God in the equation, faithful God, Sister Harriet, you know one thing. They're always going to be unfaithful people. Because there's none like him. We all messed up. We all just toe up. Bound to do wrong. Bound. Y'all heard it last week. You were here. You were here. You heard those folk retake the oath. Swear to a covenant. They're going to do right. Don't shoot the messenger. I'm just here to tell you. Keith, I'm just here to tell you. They did it again. They done messed up again. And I think sometimes, Sister V, people think that when God has a plan for your life, that you can just mess it up. You can interfere with God's plans. That's not the case. Because God is going to execute his plan no matter whether you cooperate or not. But there are some consequences in you not cooperating. The book of Numbers records the 40-year journey, primarily the 40-year journey of the Jews after bondage out of Egypt. And it's a very interesting part of the Pentateuch because Numbers, it actually is a book that deals with the math of the Bible, the numbers. And in those numbers, you can see how God, no matter what happens, you know, if he says X number of people are going to be here to do this, you can count on that. And Numbers kind of sets the stage for us. But for those of us who are in the doctrine, the heavy doctrine business, we know Numbers to be a book that shows you how you can get saved. Did you know that? Yeah. Must be, I'm not going to call on anyone. You don't even have to get nervous. I won't do it to you. Unless I see one of my immediate basic doctrine students, Amber. Okay, I must be thinking about chapter 21. In chapter 21, we see something very interesting. God has been providing for these people all this time, taking care of all their needs, you know. Got them with sandals that won't wear out, you know, and got putting food on the table, you know, raining down from heaven every day, and they're just enjoying the benefits. Ain't working nowhere, ain't doing nothing, just wandering, you know. But God is taking care of them. But then, like it is with all of us men, generically, we sin. And it's interesting the number of ways that we find to sin. In Numbers chapter 21, it's a simple thing they start complaining. You realize complaining is a sin? It's a sin, especially when God is meeting your every need. Everything belongs to the Lord. Everything you got came from the Lord. That bread that's falling out of the sky, it came from the Lord. And here they are, Fred, they're complaining. We tired of all this old bread. Bread and manna here, manna there, manna there. So here's what God says. Okay, you don't like this bread? Try a little snake to go with that bread. Put some snake between that bread. And the vipers, the snakes, they bit them, and many died. You say, well, Brother Snead, okay, that's great, but what does this got to do with today's lesson? Everything. Because despite what God is doing for them, they still messing up. God's still judging it. You say, well, Brother Snead, I thought you said it had something to do with getting saved. Yeah. Because what happened? You know what happened? When the snakes bit them, you know what they did? They said, oh, please, Mr. Moses, please, we were just playing. You know, hey, come on, can't you take a joke? You know, please, don't call off the snakes. See, because in any sin, you got to recognize it for what it is. And then you got to stop doing what you're doing. And you got to repent. And when they repented, when they asked Moses to go and pray on their behalf, talk to God on their behalf, God had a provision. He says, take the very thing that is biting them and fashion in a brazen image. Put a snake on a stick. And for everyone that would look at the stick, they shall live. That's how you get saved. Recognize sin for what it is. Know that sin will be judged. Turn from that sin, accept the snake on the stick, accept the cross at Calvary, and you shall live. And so they went on their way. Four chapters later, they were right back at it again. Because they went down and they started dealing with the Moabites. And they start letting the Moabites influence them more than God. That is sin. See, folk, you can't afford to let the world come in and dictate to you what's going on in the church. But that's what they did. They came. And because Balaam, the prophet, who could not testify against Israel and couldn't say anything bad, he conspired with Balak, really, and said, tell you what, this is how you get them. You can't get them from the outside. They're too strong. You can't get in. But you know what? Go make it an inside job. Start having the Moabite women marry the Israelites. And so they did. And you know what? Guess what? You know, they started marrying, they started hanging, you know, you have a little pillow talk at night and says, hey, you know, I'm going over to an idol worship service tomorrow night. Could you go with me? Oh, yeah, honey. Okay, I don't want to go about it. Isn't it strange how we get people can always get us to go to their worship, but we can't get them to come to ours? Isn't it amazing how liberal theology can penetrate the church, but when someone takes an evangelical stand, you know, they're aberrant, they're intolerant. But there are consequences for letting the world in and keeping the world in. Because in chapter 25, we see God dealing with them. And we see there is at least one person. All you need is one. But all you need is one. You stand at the door if nobody else stands. You serve God if nobody else serves. You teach the word if nobody else teaches. You sing a song if nobody else does it. Because all he needs is one. And in chapter 25, we're introduced to a guy named Phinehas. Now, don't get him confused. There's another one by the same name. We're going to talk about both of them today. Phineas. Phineas said, you know what? God told us not to do this. And I dare you just bring this woman up in our face. Just flaunt it in front of us. Phineas took a javelin and he thrust it through both of them. Now, 24,000 folk dead. See, because sin has its consequences. But Phineas takes a stand and says, this has got to stop. Somebody's got to say something. You can't keep on doing what you're doing. You can't keep on being unfaithful to a faithful God who has done so much for you. Take a stand. And so thus Phineas takes the stand and he kills him. Verse 10 and 11 of Numbers chapter 25 has a very interesting result. When people take a stand when something is wrong. Folk, don't be mocked. God is not a chump. God is not some cosmic bellhop that you can trifle with day in and day out. He's looking just for one faithful person to stand up and say, right is right if nobody agrees with it. And wrong is wrong if everybody agrees with it. And take the necessary action. And let's see what happens when that happens. Verse 10 and 11, right quick. And Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest hath turned mine. See what happens when one person stands up? Otherwise, these Moabite women would have been flaunted in and out, have you over there worshiping gods that God has forbidden you, says, thou shalt have no other God before me. But because, you know, they yielded to flesh, now they're out here doing it. But because one person stood up, God says, I'm going to give you my covenant of peace, which we will know as the covenant of eternal priesthood. There will be a priest because of Phineas. You'll not be totally consumed because of Phineas, because there is one that is willing to stand up. See, all it takes is you to stand up. And God, on the basis of Phineas' action, now says there will be a covenant of peace. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm here to tell you, you don't know peace until you have the peace of God. You can't have peace until you have peace with God. Because as long as you are standing on the other side, you are at war with God. You are an enemy of God. But God is so gracious and so merciful that he commended his love toward us, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. That took grace and mercy in order for that to happen. But here, Phineas stood up and he says, there'll be a covenant of priesthood because of what Phineas did. God is faithful. He's going to do his plans for you no matter what. But it takes some cooperation. Can God get just a little cooperation from you guys? Because you think, oh, you know, this is an old story, biblical. You know, I'd be glad when we get out of this Old Testament stuff. You know, hey, that stuff is gory and all of that. Let me tell you one thing. Sin is an ugly thing. And it's not something that God is going to trifle with. God and steals, renews this covenant of peace, this covenant of eternal priesthood, based on the actions of one man. But there are some consequences. Because remember where the priesthood used to lie? It ain't going to come out of there no more. See, what will happen is that you are out here doing ministry and you're doing it in perversion. God will still have ministry going on, but he'll just do it through somebody else. One monkey don't start no show. And one monkey can stop your part in the show, but can't stop the show. So here God promises, makes a promise, that this is how we're going to handle this. In verse 12, therefore, and he shall have it and his seed after him. See, that's what you got to see, is that this is an everlasting covenant. He says, this is not just for Phinehas. This is for his seed after him. So a lot of the things that we do will affect the folk that come after us. You're sitting here because of the prayers of someone else. Grandmama, Mama, all right. Papa Jim. They prayed for you when you weren't even thinking about no church. They had you on their mind. When church and God was the last thing on your mind. But on Sunday morning, your mind was not stayed on him. Especially H-I-M, capital. It may have been little him or little she, but not him. He says that because of what Phinehas did, I will instill an everlasting covenant, and it will affect the seed after him, even the covenant of the everlasting priesthood. Because he was zealous for his God and made an atonement for the children of Israel. What did Phinehas do? Most folk wouldn't have liked what he done. He killed someone. Killed two people. Put a spear in them. But he was doing it because God had directed that you've got to remove all evil. See, the issue is we wink at sin and we take it very lightly now. And because God is not, hasn't done anything today, we don't see people fall, you know, people get struck down in church more. It used to be in biblical days, it happened. And in some modern days, as a matter of fact, it's not that I'm so pious when I'm in church. Church, especially the worship hour, is one of the hours that you can really get my attention because I experienced a situation where folk who were known in the community not acting right, you know, just in and on the first Sunday, Communion Sunday, the altar in my church fell, the entire altar, and everybody around it. That left an indelible impression on me. Does it make you holy? As we're going to see in a minute, just because you hang around, you don't get holy just from hanging around. But you understand that God is not to be played with. And we become so casual now that it has become critical to our existence, because we will do anything, we will say anything. But all God is looking for is one person who's willing to stand up, that he can renew the everlasting priesthood covenant. Because now, since Calvary, we're supposed to be part of a royal priesthood. That everlasting covenant, ultimate fulfillment, will be in Jesus Christ himself. But we're going to see some things that happens. Numbers 25, verses 10 through 13, shows you how the everlasting priesthood covenant came about, how it was reinstituted after someone took some action, some necessary action. But between Numbers and 1 Samuel chapter 2, there are some 340 years. 340 years. You remember what happened back there with Phinehas? Now it's 340 years. Let us take a sneak preview of what's happening 340 years after Numbers 25. We will arrive at 1 Samuel chapter 2. And many of you know by now, I had two brothers. Didn't have any sisters, but two brothers. So us boys growing up out. I had a grandmother who was very adept at using the Word of God. She's a skilled technician. And whenever she wanted to put across a point, she would, 1 Samuel was one of the ones that she would do it, especially a point when it came to discipline us three boys, you know, three boys. She would go to 2 Samuel, and she would always start with verse 12, I believe it is, of 2 Samuel, verse 12. And we would have done something, invariably, we'd have done something, you know. And she would read this. And so, is anyone there? You there, Terry? I tell you what, could you tell me what version you're reading out of? New International, and I want somebody with the King James to get it also. Okay, all right, let's hear it. Verse 12 for now.
Eli's sons were scoundrels. They had no regard for the Lord.
Okay, King James.
The son of Eli were sons of
Baal.
Baal. Uh-huh. They knew not the Lord.
Huh, okay. Now, when I... 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 12. Okay. 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 12. We're going to get there, guys. But I want to show you this. Because she would go to this verse and she would read exactly. But she would read it out of the King James. And you know, the King James says now they were corrupt. You notice the New International Version says they were what? Scandalous. The word corrupt is used in the King James Version. When translated, it means worthless. And that's how she would read it. Now the sons of Eli were worthless because they knew not the Lord. You are worthless if you don't know the Lord. That's what the Bible says. It's not what grandmama said. It's not what Deacon Sneed says. It says they were worthless because they knew not the Lord. Turn, read for me right quick. Continue.
Now it was the practice of the priest that whenever any of the people offered the sacrifice,
I want y'all to listen.
The free servant would come with a three-pronged fork in his hand while the meat was being boiled.
Mm-hmm.
He would plunge the fork into the pan of kettle for cauldron on top.
Mm-hmm.
Whether the fork brought up, the priest would take it for himself.
Mm-hmm.
How they treated all the Israelites who came to Shiloh. But even before the fat was burned, the free servant would come and save the person who was sacrificed and give the priest some meat to roast. He won't accept bone, but only raw.
All right, bless you. You know why they were worthless? Betty, you know why they were worthless? These scoundrels, these temple bums, these miscreants, these thugs, Eli's boys, the priest's sons, they were taking the sacrificial meat. And God had prescribed it that, first of all, you take and you boil the meat. Because in boiling the meat, you would remove the fat. Then you take the fat and you sacrifice it to me. Isn't it amazing how Dr. God knew about our health long before we did? Because they could eat the rest of the meat, only the fat was sacrificed. But these boys, They said, hey, ho, pull up. We don't like no boiled meat. We like barbecue. And they were taking the meat for sacrifice. And they were using it for their own personal purposes. That makes you worthless. Trifling around with God's people, worthless. And I'm afraid that there's some Eli sons still around the church today. Folk who take advantage of God's people. Persons who are not interested in worshiping God at all. They're only interested in their self-aggrandizement, their own pockets, their own personal benefit. And God is not pleased. Because God says in verse 12 of 1 Samuel chapter 2, the boys that did this were worthless. Well, they were worthless for other reasons too, because as you read there in Samuel, these boys did some of everything. You know, the young ladies that came to church to worship, these miscreants, these thugs, they preyed on them for sexual favors and had them doing all kinds of things in the church in the name of the law. They were spiritual miscreants. They were thugs in every degree. They were worthless. They were scoundrelous. And it just goes to show us, sis, that just because you hang around the church and just because you wear the right kind of clothes and, you know, you got the right speech, doesn't make you holy. And we got to realize that the devil, he can't mess with us from the outside. Remember, go back to Numbers. He wants to penetrate you. You go to Revelations 2, the church of Pergamos. That's what God said for it. I got a problem with you. You got too much of the world in you. You got too many people that are in the world and not the word. They want to come and bring the world in, but they want to leave out the word. Don't have no Bible study. Don't read no word. Let's just have fellowship. Ooh, and I only thought that happened 340 years from Numbers. Thousands of years ago, and we're up to the same thing. Do we think that God is on vacation or something? That he's forgot? See, we're the only ones that forget history. We used to, Sister Harriet, forget history. Now we intentionally are trying to destroy history. But let me tell you, all the proponents of destroying history, you're doomed to repeat it. Because if people don't have something to measure about what was, what happened, how you got there, they will do it again and think it's new. There have been freaks and perverters all our lives, folk. Don't think that this is a new thing. Don't think you're making history by destroying it. Don't do it. The word of God is recorded here, and they could have easily taken this out in 1 Samuel. They could have easily taken Numbers 25 out. But it's a constant reminder of what we can become when we get too much of the world in us. But I'm here to remind you, as unfaithful as we are, God is still faithful. Now, some of you, you shout on that because, oh, yes, oh, yes. He'll supply all my needs according to his riches. Oh, yes, God, oh, what a wonderful God. He's going to meet my needs. Let me tell you, he's not only faithful in meeting your needs, he's faithful in executing judgment. Because there is a consequence for sin, folks. We can play with it. God doesn't wink at it. We make light of it. They said, man, that Deacon Sneeder is serious today. That's a serious matter. Because as I think about the lesson, Trace, as I read through the lesson, I'm thinking, man, we're doing the same thing.
We ain't learning nothing. I thought we were supposed to be smarter than those people. And just because you're God's chosen, those who are chosen, much is required. Yes, the Israelite, God's chosen folk, and so are you. But let me tell you something about, for those of you who think that, yeah, he's laying it on a little thick today, something must be going wrong. Yeah, something's going wrong. The same thing's been going wrong ever since Numbers 25. Ever since Genesis 1. Genesis 3, I'm sorry. The same thing, sin. And for those of you who think that it's too thick, I want you to think about this. There are 2.2 billion Christians in the world today. Only 2.2 billion. Anybody know what the world population is? 7 billion. Just went over 6 billion. So we'll say about a third of the world is Christian. Christian. But did you know that only 46% of so-called Christians believe in the resurrection? 46% believe in the resurrection, 46% don't believe in the resurrection, and 8% simply say, well, we're not sure about it. And you think that you don't have a job to do in evangelism? You think that you shouldn't be equipped? You may be sitting beside someone who doesn't know the essentials of Christian doctrine. That's a shame. First of all, you're only one third of the world's population. So McGriff was right. Man, when I started homiletics 20 some odd years ago, first class here at Resurrection, when they threw that stat at me, only 3% of the world believed that Jesus Christ lived, died, and was resurrected. 3%. And now I know why. Because we're going around counting folk that don't believe the same as you. And if they don't believe the essentials, they can do anything, they can say anything, they can go anywhere. You will never be. And so here it is, when John the Revelator sees, talks to us through Revelation and says that the church at Pergamos, you got too much world in you. I say to you, Resurrection, you got too much world in you. Because we're making the same mistakes over and over and over. We're pushing up folk, accepting any kind of stuff in the name of getting along. I don't need to get along with you. I need to love you. Because you're a fellow disciple. Because if I love you, then the harmony that God brings is all the harmony that I need. I need peace with God. What's need you? Mighty tough this morning. But we just read where the preacher's son is a thug. Both of them. Here's how God deals with it. Verse 30 and 31, if you would. Just read 30 and do it real good. Show Deacon Harmon how well you guys do when he's not here. God says, if you're playing with me in church, you dishonor me, and I'll dishonor you. Simple as that. Honor is the currency of elevation. You know, we think that, you know, we can give people money, and, you know, we think we can give them a title. But honor. If you dishonor them, that then is the currency of de-elevation. You demote something. You're trying to make God less than who he is. And God says, I won't handle that. He says, your attitude toward me is everything. And if you can permit anything in God's house, you dishonor him. You go to somebody's house. You go to somebody's house. Walk through the mud. Go to their house and put your foot on their coffee table. You don't care nothing about that person. Because first of all, if you're invited to that house, you know how those people are. You know they got white rugs under their coffee table. You got mud on your feet. The first thing you should ask is, can I take these shoes off somehow? But no, it's like going there, sitting up on that white rug and popping your feet. Oh, by the way, can you bring the brewski out of the refrigerator? Tell your children to get up and go in the other room. Hey, bud, the children live here. That's dishonor. And God says, you don't deal with me with that attitude. I recognize it for what it is. And it matters how you see me. Verse 31. I heard you back there, Sister Harris. You said, so what? Yeah, okay, Presley. So what? We do a little dishonor here, we dishonor there, we disrespect here. What's the recourse? I mean, what's the result? Before you could even get the question out your mouth, God tells you, didn't he? He says, I'm going to take away your strength. Try to fight with your hands behind your back. Try to fight with no arms. I'm going to hit you at your strength. Just when you think you're doing so good, I'm going to cut off your strength. And I'm going to cut off it forever. It ain't just going to be in your day. It's going to be for the days after you. That's why you have to live. That's why you have to bring up children. Hey, you can't have these boys around the temple doing this to women, stealing the food, stealing the money in the offering plate, drinking up the communion juice. Look at me. You see what I'm saying? My wife laughed because that's one of the things that, hey, you know, that's why I can't ever. Whenever it comes to communion day, that's yes, sir, because I had to clean up the church on Saturday. I knew where the communion stash was. Saturday night. Grandmama. Y'all clean up church today? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. First Samuel, chapter 2, verse 12. Now the sons of L.J. Dockery were worthless. You can't have it. You can't have it. And here the tanning begins. There were always instant consequences. But God here says, I'm going to attack you at your strength in the arm of thy father's house, and there shall not be an old man in thine house. Do you know what that means? These boys, they were bringing death to their heritage. They were bringing death to their house. God is telling them, there ain't going to be no old folk in your house. You can forget it. That's right. You don't live young, die young, and have a pretty corpse, but you're going to get out of here. Ah, how terrible for sin, for us. Eli, I'm thinking about Eli now, the priest. He's permitted this because he won't stand up to his own boys. Fathers, you got to stand up to your boys no matter what. You got to do it. mothers, you ought to stand up to them. Because here's that. Remember that little lady who used to read 1 Samuel 2? If there was any barking, like, you know, as you get older, you know, get a little bass in your voice. Now, let me tell you something. I tell her, you son, 6 feet. Let me tell you something. You can get as big as this house. I'll hit on one side of it. You got to let them know. Proverbs 13:31 doesn't say 13:24. Doesn't say, you know, you if you don't discipline your children, you love them more. You got to discipline. Because otherwise, you're bringing damnation to your own house. You're bringing destruction to your own house. And trust me, if you don't make them cry when they're 8 and 9, they'll make you cry when they're 18 and 19.
All right.
Bottom line. Verse 32 says, and thou shalt what?
See an enemy in my habitation, and all the wealth which God shall give is different, and there shall not be a whole hand in the house forever.
You'll prosper. You'll grow. You'll have money. You'll have it going on. You'll have big churches. You know, you'll have prosperous churches. You'll take in the money. You'll have ministry. You'll be doing great things. But God says, you ain't going to have no old men in that house. You can get, accumulate everything you want to accumulate. I won't let you enjoy it, is what that verse is saying. And so, yeah, it may look like you're getting away with it. It's your thing. Do what you want to do. I'm my own man. I'm my own woman. I can do whatever I want to do. God says, I'm going to attack you at your strength. And you know what? I'll bless you and at the same time slap you back. Because there will not be an old man in your house. There are a whole bunch of ministries that were great and flourishing. Tell me where they are now. How many of you are local San Antonians? You remember the great ministries that used to be here that are no longer here? Yeah, and some of them are still around, but they're nothing in comparison to what they used to be. And you can go to your hometown, name your hometown, you see the same thing. All the great churches of my youth would not be considered great churches now by man's standard. Exception of one. One still teaching the word, still having Sunday school. The others are having fashion shows and dinners. They're still teaching the word. But God says, you may look like you're flourishing, but I'll cut all that off. You may be styling, but I'll cut all that off because you won't get to enjoy it. You better enjoy it now. Because all of you driving around in those gold-plated Mercedes. Don't worry about a retirement plan, because you won't need one. Verse 33 says, but there is one. Here we go with that one again. I told you the significance of one. One person. God says, I will leave one. And he's going to serve. Now that has both an immediate, intermediate, and strategic prophecy. All of it has the same thing. Some of it maybe have just be strategic. Some of it may be immediate. But most of it is immediate, intermediate, and strategic. Here we have one. We know who the ultimate priest is. But in the immediate context, we know that this Eli, the priest, had another son. Oh, man, it's good to come to Sunday school. I know y'all thought he only had two boys. Remember the young man that was brought to the temple by his mother? Named Samuel, grew up in the same house. Isn't it amazing how children can come up in the same household and turn out so differently? That's amazing. And so for those who cry and wail about, my mama didn't do this for me. My grandmama, my daddy didn't do such stuff. Be quiet. As one of my favorite people used to say, just because you poor doesn't mean you got to act poor. To more accurately quote her, just because you're poor, you don't have to be nasty. God was looking at that household and saying, there is one. All they need is just one. Don't you worry about what everybody else is doing. You do it. Don't worry about on the right or the left, who's doing what. You do what you know God has called you to do, what God has anointed you to do, because you are the one that's preserving the heritage. You are the one. You're the one. God has said that I'm going to get at least one through, because my covenant will always be in force. So if everybody dies, understand the contradiction there. Everybody's going to die in the house. How will the covenant continue? Because he says there's one. I'm going to preserve one. God will always have that ram in the bush. Why don't you be it? Why don't you be the faithful one? You be the faithful one, not the unfaithful one. God is faithful, so you be faithful. Imagine that. And let me do 33 and 34 right quick together. And the man of thine, whom I shall not cut off from mine altar, shall, and to grieve thine heart, and all the increase of thy house shall die in the flower of the age. And this shall be a sign unto thee, that shall come upon the two sons of Hophni. Hophni and Phinehas. I'm going to save one, but them two boys, them rascals, they're going to be dead as a doornail on the same day. They don't need to make plans for Christmas. They won't make it. They are going to be cut off. Right when things look their very best, those two boys that you hold on to, that you're so dear that you don't want to discipline them, I'm going to take them out. And I'm going to take them out on the same day. And I will raise me up a faithful priest. And in my mind, and I will build him a sure house, and he shall walk before mine anointed forever. God says, I gave you the everlasting covenant of priesthood, and there will be one. We know that this is strategically or ultimately fulfilled in Jesus Christ himself. But we got to get there. Hophni and Phinehas, they won't be around. God's going to take care of this. They will be cut down when things are most fruitful in their ministry. But I will preserve one to have this everlasting priesthood. And it shall come to pass that everyone that is left in thine highest house shall come and crouch to him for a piece of silver and a morsel of bread, and shall say, put me, I pray thee, unto one of the priest's offices, that I may eat a piece of bread. Well, folk, there was a day that came, Phinehas and Hophni, gone. It looked bleak. They had to go back to verse 32, 33 here to find, make sure. How can the covenant be continued? Oh, but there is one. And then they had to look anticipatorily to the one that would come after them. But Hophni and Phinehas, they were unfaithful and they got their just reward. Before we go, it just struck me. Hophni and Phinehas. They were young rascals, cut down the same day. But you know what? What about Eli? Oh, well, he's just a good father who loved his children. He didn't want to discipline him. When God talked to Eli, he was already 90 years old. But you got to understand, in them days, 90, that was a young whippersnapper. Abraham was still having children at 90. But in case you ask, God is true to his word. Because when things were going well, Eli, the judge, the priest, one day was sitting down, right in his 98th year. Red back and broke his neck and died. Because God's word is true. There will not be one that will continue in that royal line. No, not one.